You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I'm joined by Mark Walker. Mark is the founder of Luxmana Investments, which focuses on residential and multifamily investments. He was actually one of those guys who went from being a part-time investor with a full-time job in high tech to someone who quit the corporate rat race in pursuit of his passion. And now he thrives as a multifamily investor. He's had a ton of success at it. I'm really excited to have him on the show. So Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much, Ken. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. So you are out of what part of Colorado again?
Near Boulder. It's north of Denver. Okay. Not too far from the ski resorts, which is nice.
That's nice. This time of year especially. I'm sure you've gotten some skiing in already.
I sure have. Want to get a whole lot more in, but yeah, definitely been up a couple times.
Fantastic. So is that primarily where you operate your real estate business then?
It is. Well, you know, obviously I operate out of my home, but I own a, you know, moderate size portfolio here in Colorado, and I've also recently expanded to Texas as well.
Oh man, very cool. Well, before you got started in Colorado and Texas, give us your story, man. How did you get into real estate?
Oh boy. You know, I think I started like 80% of the people I talk to in this business. I read that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah.
It's literally mentioned in every podcast that I do.
I swear it probably is. It's, yeah. Have you read it, Ken?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've read it and literally I feel like every one of my guests have read it and it changed their life. We should just start giving these things out for free, because if you haven't read this yet, it's changing everybody's life. And it's a book that's been around, I mean, 20 years probably at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I read it back in 2003, and it was then in about 2004, I bought my very first rental property. It was a duplex in South Denver. And one thing that was really exciting about it for me at that time was the first year it had a 36.5% cash on cash return.
Wow.
Yeah, and let me tell you, when that's your first deal, that lights a fire under you, gets you really excited.
Yeah. Well, that was that was before real estate even crashed. How were you able to get such a good deal there in 2004?
Well, you know, in 2004, you know, I think one of the things that really made that, you know, cash on cash return jump so high is that you could get interest only loans for residential properties back then.
True.
I think those are pretty rare now.
Right.
But that definitely helped. And then it was one of those deals too, where the day it hit the market, you know, I was in there within hours and submitted an offer, and fortunately they took my offer right away. So, yeah, I think just a lot of things worked out really well with that one. But I owned that for about a year or two, and then I sold it with the intent to reinvest, but I never did for lots of different reasons. But it turned out to be a blessing in disguise, mm-hmm. because we know what happened in the 2008-2009 timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up getting back involved, networking with some folks in the 2010 timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a general contractor, and we decided to do a scrape together. When I say scrape, I mean we bought a single family home in a really trendy part of Denver, and we scraped it down to the ground, and we built a three-story duplex in its place.
Wow.
Yeah, we ended up selling off each side. That whole project took about 16 months from, you know, the day we bought the land to the day we sold the second unit. And we ended up doing one more of those just down the street. But at this point, you know, after doing the first one, it was 2011. And I knew that I wanted to get back into buying passive investments, investments that would give me mailbox money, monthly cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking the gains from that first deal, and I started buying rental properties. And I ended up buying over two dozen single-family homes in the Denver area between 2011 and 2014. And I also bought a 12-unit apartment complex in late 2013.
Wow. Awesome.
So that was kind of my first entry into, you know, doing apartments, you know, something obviously bigger than four units, you know, getting in, doing a commercial loan, stuff like that.
Now, let me ask you this. Were you working full time while you were doing this, or was this your full time gig?
I was actually working full time up until January 2015. So I was doing this as a side gig until then.
Man, awesome.
And yeah, I worked in high tech. I worked. I was in senior leadership for a high tech company. So, you know, I had the really big fat W-2 paycheck. You know, and you know, it was kind of interesting when I did escape the rat race in January of 2015. The way I had set my goal for deciding when I would leave was I asked myself, you know. At some point in the past, I couldn't tell you exactly when it was, but it was obviously before I had started, you know, really getting involved in investing, what kind of lifestyle I wanted to live, you know, what would make me happy. And then I just basically set a goal to create passive income that was 2 times that per month. And that's what it was for me. Now, with that said, I left a very high paying job. And I'll tell you, it took me 6 to 12 months after escaping the rat race to really get used to that. You know, so for anyone that really aspires to escape the rat race, that's something I think you have to mentally prepare for, because for the 14 years prior to that, I was with this high tech company and my mind was being trained that every single 2 weeks, more money would magically appear in my bank account.
Right, just magic how it happened.
It was, you know, and so, you know, it literally took me 6 to 12 months to adjust to that. I made my money. I mean, I made plenty of money to live the lifestyle I wanted to, but, you know, walking away from a high paying job, that took a little getting used to. I have to admit.
Well, you're probably never more motivated to make something work when you know that paycheck's not coming in your account unless you go out there and make it happen.
That's right. So at that point, it was January of 2015, and you know, my cousin, who's been a veteran in the multifamily business for 30 years, he gave me just this tremendous opportunity. He said, well, if you're leaving your job, why don't you just come and job shadow me for a little while and see how the really big stuff goes down. Now, my cousin, he doesn't touch anything less than 100 units.
Wow.
And he, truthfully, most of his deals are 200, 300 units at a time. He's the real thing. And so, you know, I had to take him up on that opportunity. So I went and I started sitting in his office. I went ahead and I got licensed too.
Oh, interesting.
You know, which right. I'd never done, you know, because I figured it's going to complement what I do going forward. So I went ahead and I got licensed. I'm a horrible broker because I don't go looking for listings. I don't represent buyers. I really just represent myself. But you know, I spent, you know, 8 or 9 months just sitting back and watching, seeing how the larger multifamily deals are done. And after doing that, I ended up putting a 64-unit apartment complex under contract and closed that in December 2015.
Wow. So the very first year of you quitting, you were able to find a 64-unit complex.
Yes. And isn't that interesting, too? I had no job. Right.
Right.
All I really had was the experience, you know, from owning another 12-unit apartment complex, and I had all these, you know, single-family homes. I had 36 units in total when I left my corporate job. You know, I had the 12-unit, and I had these, but you know, about 24 single-family rental properties at the time. But I had no W-2 or no job, right? And I think that's one of the things I love about multifamily is that the way that these properties are underwritten is just completely different than buying a residential property. You know, they, instead of looking to you, the individual, for the debt service, they look to the property for the debt service.
It's much more asset-based lending than credit-based lending.
Yeah, it is. You know, and for anyone that aspires to do larger multifamily, there's really three building blocks that I'd say you have to focus on, you know, as you strive towards that goal that are going to prepare you for that. The first thing is your experience. This is not a scientific statement at all, you know, but I swear up and down, Ken, that the bank bases 50% of the decision on whether or not you've done multifamily properties before, whether you have experience with, you know, repositioning them, restabilizing them, you know, and successfully operating multifamily properties. That's mm-hmm. a huge piece of it. The other two things, the other two building blocks are balance sheet related. First of all, they want you to have a net worth equal to or greater than the loan amount. Again, that's not a firm statement. It's going to vary by lender, but that's a general rule of thumb.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the third thing is they typically like to see that you're going to have enough post-close liquidity to make 12 mortgage payments after you close, assuming that the property's income for the next 12 months is zero. Do you have enough cash left over to pay them 12 mortgage payments?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three building blocks. And, you know, I think that, you know, as you're whether you're a new investor or you're just starting out or whether or not you have a portfolio already, you know, if you want to do larger multifamily, those are the three things that you need to, you know, focus on and make sure that you have really solid to do a larger multifamily deal.
Well, so what did that look like for you then? You had just quit your job, so it's not like you had documentable W-2 income. Like, obviously, you had a tax return from your portfolio. How did mm-hmm. you put together that very first deal? You went out there and bought 64 units. What did that look like?
Yeah, well, what ended up happening is that 12-unit apartment complex, I was originally planning on holding that for 10 years. I bought that in 2013, the tail end of 2013. Well, I had owned the thing for less than a year and a half, and someone came along and offered, completely off market, a price that was within spitting distance of where I expected to exit 9 years later.
Wow, geez.
You know, at this point, too, things were really starting to take off in Colorado. I mean, you know, I don't know if you read about, you know, Denver in the news right now, but, you know, inventory here is extremely low. Prices have gone through the roof. That phenomena really started in 2015.
Hmm.
And, you know, so I sold that property and I had this, put into a 1031 exchange.
Gotcha.
And so that brought, you know, I had 217,000, you know, in that 1031 exchange.
Mm-hmm.
In order to close the 64 unit, I needed $631,000 in mm-hmm. capitalization. That was everything. You know, that was the down payment. That was, you know, closing costs. That was, you know, legal fees, all that stuff. You know, and so I took my 217 and I went out and I raised the remaining amount from it ended up being two equity partners. And so I guess you could say that was my very first syndicated deal. Because the Luxmana portfolio is 100% my own money otherwise. So this was really my very first syndicated deal. I'll tell you, too, it was really helpful, you know, having the, you know, experience, you know, being able to demonstrate my experience, you know, and the success that I had. You know, obviously I'd escaped the rat race and was living very comfortably off my passive income. That obviously helped and, you know, going out and trying to find, you know, some equity partners as well. You know, but those equity partners are completely silent. You know, and it's great because we just passed the 1 year anniversary as well of that property. And I'm really excited that, I not only did everything I said I would do, but I ended up, distributing more than originally planned in the original pro forma. So the two equity partners are, you know, pretty happy. They're able to sit back and get a fantastic return.
I can't stress how important and huge that is, especially when you're right out of the gates to have some success with an equity partner, because those equity partners are going to want to continue to invest with you, but they're also going to be the ones out there speaking on your behalf when you're out there raising more money for future projects to talk about how you perform. So that's huge that right out of the gates you performed as well as you did.
Yeah, I completely agree with you that, you know, the stars really aligned really well on this deal. You know, and it's funny, you're right. You know, once you have that success with equity partners, they are really excited to do another deal with you, which is obviously the case with me. I've got other people, you know, on the sidelines. Now my biggest problem is finding the deal, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So, well, that's a good problem. You've got the money, now you just got to find the deal.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you put any debt on that property, or do you have plans to, or are you just staying in a cash position then?
No, we ended up doing a Fannie Mae agency debt on it. Mm-hmm. So it's a non-recourse loan. We ended up getting 80% leverage.
Wow.
And yeah, that's really well. Largely had to do with the area. This property is in Dallas County in Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. So the lenders typically are more comfortable if you're in a large metro area like that. They're more comfortable going in higher leverage on it. So mm-hmm. I got 80% leverage. What's also really fantastic about this non-recourse loan is that it's is loan to cost, not loan to value. Now, the difference between that is loan to value, essentially the lender will give you 80% of your purchase price.
Mm-hmm.
The loan to cost actually allowed me to not only get 80% for the purchase price, but also for the renovation budget that I had planned for the very first year.
That's huge.
Yeah, that was huge. I got about $5,000 per unit in renovation money for the first year that was, I was able to finance. And then I was also able to get 3% for soft costs. So that's everything from, title fees, legal fees, loan fees, things like that. So that was a nice little kicker as well. So it's a fantastic loan and non-recourse.
Like Man, that's huge. Now, did your equity partners have to go on that, or just you? Were you the only one that had to sign on the debt?
My equity partners did sign on the debt on that one.
Gotcha.
I think obviously going forward, I would love to be the only sponsor, on a deal.
Right.
But if you, again, remember the rule of you've got to have a, they look at your balance sheet, which I was right on the cusp for mm-hmm. this particular deal,
right?
Of having net worth strong enough to do that. So the other two guys came in to strengthen the position, and obviously as I look to do larger and larger deals, these two guys probably will stay in what we call my key principal group. So our combined net worth and combined liquidity, can count towards us doing a much larger deal.
Right.
Anywhere from a $5 to $10 million deal going forward.
Well, so this was your first deal. This was 2015. What does the last, year and a half look like for you?
Well, I spent, so that was December of 2015 that I acquired that property. And so the first half of 2016, I was really focused on overseeing the renovation of the property.
Gotcha.
And so, that was a fun experience. And when it comes to acquiring a larger multifamily property, your objectives are pretty clear, right? And that's you want to increase your income and decrease your expenses.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that's so important is because of the way these properties are valued, and that's one of the things that I love about multifamily versus residential.
Mm-hmm.
Residential properties, they're worth whatever someone's willing to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you call in an appraiser to appraise your single family home, they're going to appraise it based on the comparable method. They're going to look at the property down the street, what it sold for 3 months ago. They're going to look at the property, on the other side of the street that, sold a month ago or that may be on the market. They're going to compare kind of the amenities, and they're going to say, yep, this is what your property's worth. When it comes to a larger multifamily property, they generally take they appraise it based on the income method, and they're going to say, what's the net operating income of the property? And they're going to divide that by the going cap rate in the area and for that type of asset. And so if you increase your income and decrease your expenses of your property, then you are going to force the appreciation of your property.
Mm-hmm.
I love that about multifamily.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the next 6 months, I'll even say some of it bled over into nine because we had some budget left over. But, over the next 6 to 9 months, I was really laser focused on increasing the income, raising the rents. So I was doing improvements and renovating units, things that would result in higher rents. And I was also doing things to decrease expenses. like water conservation plan. Also, you know, renegotiating the utility rates and things like that that decrease the expenses. And so, you know, that was one of the reasons, too, that I was able to end up paying out more to my two investors was because of what was accomplished during that first 6 to 9 months.
Now, is it one of those things, you know, a lot of folks in the multifamily space do those exact same things to improve, you know, the return on the property and then in turn sell it, obviously, you know, to maybe even a new cap rate, whatever the going cap rate is in the area, but then realize, you know, some significant gains. Is that your plan, is to exit this, or are you looking just to hold this thing long term for cash flow?
You know, it's great to have options. When I originally, you know, did the pro forma and, you know, made the pitch to the investors, the plan was to hold it for 5 years. But, you know, we always agreed that if the market remained strong, that we would reevaluate that and look at either doing a supplemental loan or, and you know, so that's essentially a cash out refi, and giving, you know, a good chunk or all of the investors' original equity back, or, you know, we would possibly just look at holding on to it and cash flowing it like crazy. So, you know, here we are. We're now what I call stabilized. Mm-hmm. And so the next step is to season the financials. So take 6 to 9 months of just regular operations of the property so we can, you know, have a financial statement that reflects the new financial performance of the property.
Mm-hmm.
After doing that for 6 to 12 months, we're seasoned. And then it'll be very easy to get a debt quote, you know, to look at doing a supplemental loan to get some cash out. Or, you know, at the time, too, we'll probably get a BOV, you know, and, you know, look at what we could possibly sell the property for.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you have options. That's the thing. Once you've stabilized Absolutely. It and you've improved it, now it's sort of – it's up to you what you want to do with it. But it's one of those things. You could sell it in 1031, but what are you going to put it in? Are there other opportunities like this out there right now?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I couldn't have said it better myself, Ken. That's something I'm always thinking about because remember me telling you that I 1031 exchanged, you know, to buy this property?
Yeah.
I closed on day 180.
Oh, did you really? The very last day available.
I did. It was by the skin of my teeth. And that's just some stress I don't want again, man.
So, well, and finding another good deal. I mean, the market's solid and there's a lot of demand for multifamily right now. I mean, what are you doing right now to even source it in new properties?
You know, I like to call owners directly. You know, and the thing is that we all have to keep in mind is that, you know, owners, you know, are getting called by brokers all the time, you know, so you're competing with brokers calling them too. But I call them not as a broker. I call them as a principal that wants to buy the deal, you know, they're buy directly from them. And, you know, that typically, you know, resonates with them, you know, a little bit more, you know, because they are getting hounded more by the brokers. At the same time, too, you know, they're not going to sell it to you for less than what they, you know it's worth and stuff like that. And if you can have a coming of the minds, if it's a win-win scenario, you know, that's the way I like to do it. You know, rather than, you know, getting locked up in a really, really long sales cycle. That with properties that are on the market. Now there's still lots of properties out there that are good deals, but you know, I'm not just looking for a deal, I'm looking for the deal.
Sure.
And you know, I'm looking for deals that specifically match my acquisition criteria that I know you know, go with my secret sauce. You know, I have a way, I know how to unlock value from these types of assets, right? So I'm looking for an asset that's going to fit my unique, you know, sauce or my special way of unlocking that value.
Is there a certain cap that you're targeting on multifamily, or at least one that you think you can achieve when you've improved the property?
Oh boy, you know what? I'm really conservative on that assumption. You know, the going in cap rate, you know, I'm not as concerned about as much as my exit cap rate and what I could. And you know, what the spread would look like. I am pretty conservative. I don't know. Maybe that's part of the reason why I'm not doing more deals, you know, myself, is because I'm too conservative. But I generally assume that, you know, the cap rates, you know, are going to go up. So I usually assume, like on, say, a B-minus class property, in Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm assuming an exit cap rate of like 7.5%, just to be conservative. Now that's kind of high, but you know, then again, look at what's happening with rates here the last month or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have eked up a little bit. If you know, the same thing happened last year, and then they ended up coming back down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if this time is different, if they continue to eke up, you know, the cap rates will follow. So I'm really conservative on that exit cap rate.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, are there other markets that you're targeting right now, or are you primarily looking in Dallas?
I'm primarily looking in the Dallas area and the San Antonio area, and that's because I have systems in place there.
Okay.
Colorado, I obviously have systems in place as well. If I could find a deal here, I would, you know, absolutely love to do it. But I'm not looking here as proactively just because it's such a competitive market here in Colorado right now. It's very much a seller's market. Hard
right.
to find something.
Well, maybe talk to us for just a minute about those systems. What does it look like to be on the lookout and be on have an acquisition model for multifamily?
Yeah, you know, I think this, you know, probably some of the biggest systems are, you know, your property manager. And what kind of systems they have in place. And when I refer to systems, I'm referring to how do they screen potential tenants, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of managers out there that are really good at just finding warm bodies to put inside your units.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how I like to go about that, right? I want a property manager that has a process in place to screen potential tenants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they do criminal background checks, make sure there's no felonies? Do they verify income to make sure that they have enough income to afford the rent, you know, every single month?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. Do they also call, you know, references and things like that as well? Then, of course, and this is extremely important, what if someone doesn't pay?
Mm-hmm.
What's their process for dealing with that? What's their process for collections? And what happens, worst case scenario, if the person doesn't end up paying at all and you have to do an eviction to regain possession of the property? Every single state has different laws around this, around regaining possession of your property. And that's one of the things – that's something I love about both Colorado and Texas. They're very landlord-friendly states. But let's just say for some reason that the best you can do legally to regain possession is to have someone out in 26 days. Then I want a property manager that has their process down to 26 days.
Right. Yep.
Not 27, not 30, you know, because time really is money when it comes to these types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, those are the types of things I'm looking at. I also look at their property management software and things like that to, you know, because I do have multiple property management companies, I do need ways to integrate into my bookkeeping system and stuff like that. So I care about that kind of stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm looking for systems. I'm looking for systems with great people behind it. I'm not necessarily just looking for great people.
Right,
know?
Right. Yep. So. Yeah, that's property managers will make or break a property. That goes for
Absolutely.
Single family, multifamily, commercial, whatever. You definitely have to have the right property manager in place.
I completely agree with you, yeah.
What about on the acquisition side? What are you doing to find properties? Have you just enlisted some local commercial brokers?
You know, yeah, there's that. And then, like I said, I try to do, you know, some. I wish I could do more of it. I need to do more of it. But I do try to call owners directly. You know, just if nothing else, just to have relationships,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, you can learn from other owners as well.
Right.
You know, and but if they, you know, ever want to sell, you know, I want them to think of me, you know, first, maybe give me a shot at it.
Yep.
Maybe to check their boxes, you know, and things like that. And like I said, I'm looking for specific types of properties, right, that have a value, what we call a value add component.
Mm-hmm.
I'm typically looking for C class multifamily properties that are in B class areas, you know, that have either been maybe poorly managed or maybe have not been managed to their full potential.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that property owner is not billing back for utilities yet. Maybe rents are below market. You know, I'm also looking for properties that haven't been renovated in a while, where I know that I can go in and I can maybe invest, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 per unit or more, to renovate a unit and then raise the rents, you know, $200 per month. You know, so I'm definitely looking for value add type deals. And those are pretty easy to spot. You know, if you know your area, you know, you can typically tell by driving by properties which ones have, been recently renovated or need some work and stuff like that. So
are you spending a lot of time in the Dallas area managing your existing property but then sourcing new ones?
You know, I probably go down when I was renovating the property. I was in Dallas maybe once or twice a month. And, but now that the property is stabilized, I don't need to go down there any more than maybe every 3 months or so to check on that property. Now, with that said, I am still trying to source deals in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So, you know, I do get down there occasionally, like every couple months or so to, you know, check out properties, see what's out there on the market, you know, drop in. You know, on other properties, and you know, I'll sometimes shop other properties. Where I'll literally just go in and you know ask questions. Sometimes I'll just pretend like I'm looking for a place to live, and sometimes I just you know come right out and say, hey, you know, I own the property down the street or whatever, and you know, I'm just checking in, you know, seeing how things are going, and they're usually very happy to share, you know, their rents with me and you know what their occupancy rates are and stuff like that.
Gotcha. So you've been at this for a number of years, obviously before you quit your job and then since you've quit your job and gotten into the multifamily space. Any of the houses you've done or the multifamily deals that you've done stand out to you as your best deal ever?
You know, I'm going to say the 64 unit just because, you know, that was it's funny because at the time that felt like a really big deal. Mm-hmm. But in the grand scheme of things, it's still pretty small. But you know, that was really a game changer in terms of, you know, learning how to, you know, some of the different ways to unlock value.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, multifamily is so different than residential. And one of the obvious ways is that forced appreciation, So there was a lot of things that I learned, you know, along that journey of renovating that property and repositioning it.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that definitely is my best deal ever. And there's, you know, there's things that went, you know, obviously really well with it. You know, obviously I got the NOI much higher than I originally anticipated. But let me give you an example, Ken, of something that did not go well.
Okay.
Properly. Yep. Learning.
Sure.
In Colorado, when you build a property, you get a certificate of occupancy, and as long as the building doesn't burn down or something like that, you're never going to need to get a CO again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Texas, you need to get a CO every single time the property trades hands.
Really?
And when they do that, the fire marshal comes in and, you know, the city comes in and inspects. And the city can literally, if they don't like something, if they don't like the countertops in particular units or whatever, they can say you need to repair these things. And they can force you to do it. They can put a world of hurt on you if you don't do it. So in this particular case, when I had the property inspected during my due diligence period, the pool checked out fine, was in, you know, decent condition. And, you know, I did not plan any – I did not have any plans for, you know, doing any work to the pool in my first year CapEx budget. Well, the city thought differently. They said, we want you to replaster the pool.
Oh, no.
Well, that should have been $6,000 or $7,000. Well, once you start peeling back the onion, doing one thing, one thing happens after another, and the pool ended up costing $15,000.
Oh, ouch!
Yeah, you know. Now, fortunately, I had some CapEx set aside for stuff like this. You know, unexpecteds.
Yep.
Right, and there were other areas where I was able to come in under budget and stuff like that, and end up, you know, no problem. It was. But boy, was that a learning, you know, for me as well, especially with the city. And, you know, I'll tell you too, rather than get mad about the city, you know, I really have an attitude with the city is, you know, they're my partner. You know, we both want to have the best community as possible. We want to also, and I also want to improve the communities that this, you know, that are around this apartment, on my, the apartment complex and stuff like that. So, you know, I really look to the city as a partner. And I think, you know, next time, going forward, you know, I like to be more, you know, engaged with the city up front.
So. That's smart. You know, we, in all of our projects, in most of which are single family, we always have a miscellaneous line item because we just know those unforeseen things. And sometimes it's the city coming in and telling us to spend money on things we didn't anticipate spending money on. So just
absolutely
preparing for the unexpected is definitely a big part of real estate.
Absolutely.
So talk to us for a minute about Luxmana Investments.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I'll tell you what. You know, Luxmana has always been my is obviously my company. It's always been my primary investment vehicle. But lately, I've been doing some blogging, and you know, I do this because I want to, you know, I want to give back. I like to share what I've learned. After all, you know, there are people like my cousin, for example, that were there to help me, you know, and so, you know, that's why I do some of this stuff. But as a way of saying thank you to everyone for listening to this podcast, I would like to make a free gift available. It's a paper that I've written. It's called 10 Not So Obvious Ways to Boost Your Multifamily Property NOI. And, as I talked about earlier, one of the things I love about multifamily is forced appreciation, right? If I go in there and increase income and decrease expenses, then I am going to force the appreciation and the value of my property. So this guide is something that I've written. It's just, you know, some things, little things I've learned along my journey of ways to unlock that value. And so if you just go to my website, to www.luxmana.com/deal farm, then you can get access to that paper. And by the way, Luxmana, it's spelled LuxMana.com/deal farm.
Well, Mark, we super appreciate you offering that up for free to our listeners. I'll be sure to put that in the show notes as well. Again, folks, it's at luxmana.com/deal farm. Mark, thanks again for coming on the show. This was great.
Hey, thank you, Ken. This was a blast.
All right, take care. Hey folks, it's Ken again, and I want to talk to you for just a quick second about becoming a private lender with our company, Georgia Residential Partners. If you've got money right now sitting on the sidelines, maybe it's in a bank account earning less than 1%, or maybe it's in the stock market and you're worried about where the stock market is headed, you might want to consider becoming a private lender with our company. Where you might be getting 1% to 2% on a CD or a money market account right now, when you become a private lender with us, you're actually well into the double digits in terms of return on investment. Again, if you've got money that's not working for you right now, it's sitting on the sidelines, and you want to get it into investment that's safe, that's passive, and has the opportunity to get you well into the double digits, please reach out to me. You can actually contact us through our website at dealfarm.net. Go to the Contact Us page. It goes right into my inbox, and I will reply and set up a time to talk. Thanks so much for listening to The Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.